My name is Alex Hernandez. I'm a 21-year-old entrepreneur. Each week, I bring a brand new episode inspiring dreams, growth, and learning. You are now listening to a brand new episode of The H Project. Turn up the volume. It's time to grind. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the H Project podcast. I had the opportunity to sit down with Joe Fairless and ask a ton of questions about real estate investing. Joe is an interesting guy. He controls over $21 million in real estate. He's currently writing a book on how to have a remarkable career. And today we learn about investing in apartment complexes. But before we get into the show, I want to thank Mario Jimenez for connecting Joe and I. Truly grateful to have people like this on the show, and I know you will enjoy this interview. So that's enough of me. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of The H Project. I want to introduce Joe Fairless. How are you doing, Joe?
Hey, doing really well, Alex. Thanks a lot.
Good, man. I'm excited to get you on. And so what you can do for us is in 120 characters or less, can you tell us who you are and what you do, Joe?
I am a real estate entrepreneur. I buy apartment communities with investors and share in the profits.
Nice. That was definitely under 120 characters. But so you're a real estate genius with over $21 million in investment properties. But can you give us some context of who you were before you started in real estate?
Sure. Well, I'd say I'm the same person, but my occupation is different. Although I'm big into self-improvement and development, so I am continually evolving my mindset for sure. What I was doing before I was a real estate entrepreneur is I graduated from Texas Tech in 2005. I went to New York City right after that. I was working on Madison Avenue in New York City about 2 weeks after I walked the stage for graduation. And I was, working at an ad agency, making, $30,000, which in New York City isn't a lot of money, and in most places it isn't, but especially in New York City. I didn't have any money to invest, but I was once I saved up enough, which was $1,000 after a couple years of working, I learned how to invest in real estate. Bought a house, my first house, in 2009 while working at an advertising agency. Climbed the corporate ladder relatively quickly. I was the youngest vice president of a New York City advertising agency. Nice. So I was VP before my 30th birthday. I was making base salary of $150,000, and then I had a bonus on top of that. So making pretty good money. I kept my cost of living the same. I lived in the same apartment that my first year in New York, I lived in Brooklyn in an area called East Flatbush, Brooklyn, which is a very at the time it was the busiest police precinct in all the five boroughs. So I'll let you decide if that was safe or not. And then I lived in the East Village after that, which is a great area. But I lived in the same apartment for 9 years. And my friends would make fun of me because I had a roommate and I lived in, the size of a shoebox apartment. Mm-hmm. But I kept my fixed costs the same, and I invested the money I was making in New York while having somewhat of sane expenses. Yeah. Into real estate somewhere else. And that's kind of what triggered me. I saw the light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, well, got a lot of property, or I got a lot of opportunity to buy bigger stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's whenever I was like, okay, if I'm making spending a lot of time and making $150 on a house a month, then what would it be like if I spent similar amount of time and made 150 times however many houses I buy at the same time? Mm-hmm. So really, the economies of scale light bulb went off, and simultaneously, I was not fulfilled by my advertising job anymore. Just wasn't digging it. Tony Robbins, I'm a huge Tony Robbins fan. He talks about the six human needs. I won't go into all six of them, but the last two, growth and contribution, mm-hmm. lead to fulfillment. And I didn't feel like I was growing. I didn't feel like I was contributing in a meaningful way in advertising. You can, but I'm personally not wasn't wired that way anymore. So that's when I went and started my own thing.
Cool. You know, and something that I can kind of pick from that is you delayed your gratification for buying the nice and shiny stuff. So you then can invest the money you were making while keeping your fixed costs down. And now look at you now, you know, and I think a lot of people can't foresee that or can't look that far in the future or, you know, just kind of stay that disciplined. So that's pretty cool. You know, I hear a lot of, so I'm in college right now, and especially kids my age who are starting to get better jobs, who are starting to make some more money. They go out and buy new cars. They go out and buy new, you know what I mean? I'm sure you've seen it, but,
yep. So absolutely. Yeah. It's just, it's, you know, just knowing what the, having a vision for where you want to head. Sure. Or where you want to go, because
exactly.
If you're caught up in the moment and in the immediate satisfaction or acknowledgement of something, but you don't have a long-term vision, then you're constantly going to be chasing shiny objects.
Exactly. So real estate was something kind of, it was something you kind of fell into, right? You would say?
I wouldn't say I fell into it. I'd say that I read at least a book a month, and I read Investing for Dummies, and in Investing for Dummies, I ended up seeing that there are three different ways of investing: stocks, bonds, real estate, mm-hmm. and investing in startups. And at that point, I saw that real estate really made the most sense to me.
Yeah.
And then I continued down that path.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So are you wholesaling and flipping properties, or do you
just
stick to your bread and butter apartment complexes?
No, I only buy apartment communities, and how I buy them is with some of my money and then with partner money, so investors, and then we buy it together and we share in the profits.
Awesome. Can you name a few advantages multifamily properties have?
Yeah, over just...
Let's say
anything
over,
or
yeah, let's just say as a whole, multifamily properties, and then what we'll do is we'll compare it to single family units. I mean,
okay,
explain the differences and some of the advantages. You can talk about the tax advantages you may see with the multifamily.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's tax advantages with any buy and hold real estate, mm-hmm. Because there's depreciation. Well, I think any buy and hold real estate, but I'm not an accountant. But I can tell you with single families and multifamilies, there's depreciation. And so basically what that means for anyone who hasn't invested in real estate is as you own the property, you get to depreciate a portion of the property, even though in reality it might be appreciating.
Mm-hmm.
So your value very well could be increasing while the on paper your property is decreasing. And the reason that's important is because that saves money on taxes. Now, the catch 22 is that you have to pay that money back whenever you sell the property, and I'm generalizing because there's exceptions, unless you do a 1031 exchange, and that kind of gets into the weeds a little bit. But depreciation's one, or unless it's your personal residence, then there's no capital gains tax up to a certain point. But again, I'm not a CPA. So the other thing is really cash flow. I mean, you've got with multifamily, you got a lot of different quote unquote houses in one confined area. So you're able to have economies of scale and cash flow as a result of it. So I'd say those are a couple. I mean, there's a whole lot of them, but those are the top two, I'd say.
Cool. So do you think everyone, no matter their profession, should have their hand in real estate? And if so, why?
No, I'd say that if you say everyone should have their hand in real estate, no, it's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd say it just depends on what your goals are. The reason why I say it's not for everyone is your risk tolerance might not be there. Real estate has risks. As with any type of investment, there are risks. If you're completely risk adverse, then put your money in a certificate of deposit, a CD, and make 1% on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you are wanting to diversify your portfolio or wanting to create your own financial freedom, then it's certainly a good way to do that. I mean, I'd say the most of the millionaires out there got their wealth through real estate, because it makes a whole lot of sense. You buy something that's leveraged, which you can't really do with stocks. There's some, but for the most part, you can't. You buy something that's leveraged. You receive cash flow on a monthly basis, and you have the people. You are at the same time having other people pay down what you owe on the property, and then you sell it later, and it's worth more money than what you paid for it. I mean, it's a pretty ridiculous business model.
Sure. Okay, let's talk about closing a sale then. What are some tips that you have for in the art of salesmanship? What does it take to be good at closing deals?
Well, you've got to know what they're looking for. You got to just with any, it's similar to marketing. Like I mentioned, I was the youngest VP of a New York City advertising agency, and before we come up with a campaign, we got to know our audience, and we got to know what are the goals, what are the objectives, what do they want, how do they spend their time. Same with closing a deal, whether it's a single family home or a 250 unit apartment community. You know, I've closed on both, and it's all about knowing what your outcome is, what your objectives are, and then learning what their objectives are, and then matching that up. So it's identifying, are they more focused on price? Are they more focused on terms? And what can you do to make sure that both the price and the terms are agreeable to both of you?
Sweet. Great answer. How is it possible for someone to start in real estate that has little to no money to start with?
Well, depends on how you're defining little. But let's just say no. So let's just say no money. If you don't have any money, then first you got to educate yourself. And podcasts are free. You know, I have a podcast. It's a daily podcast, Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever. That would be a way. Don't just listen to mine. Listen to many others. There's Michael Blanc has a good podcast. And others, and read a lot of books. Go to the library, read a lot of books. And the whole purpose is to establish a foundation for your knowledge. And then once you have that working foundation established, and you understand the business model behind a particular type of real estate, like, you know, there's tons: storage units, retail, office, you know, single families, and then there's business models within each of those: fix and flip, lease option, wholesale. I mean, it's really endless. So first thing is to educate yourself. After you educate yourself, then you identify which business model makes sense and maps back to your goals. Then third, you see if there's an opportunity in your area to implement that business model. If all of those things are aligned, at that point you start taking some action. And there's all sorts of ways to get into it without any money once you have that education. I interview people all the time on my podcast who started out right after maybe a bankruptcy. Yeah. and was able to climb the ranks, or you can do partnerships where you do all the work and you don't put up any of the money, and you get in that way, start building a track record, tons of different ways.
Cool. And like you just touched on, you said you're the host of your own podcast. I'll have that linked up in the show notes so you guys can go check that out. And I've listened to it. I do like it, and I'm going to be a regular listener as well. But can you tell us what the Best Real Estate Advice podcast is actually about?
Sure. Yeah, it's well, as the name would imply, we talk about our favorite cartoon. No, okay. It really is just about getting the best real estate advice ever from the guests. And I've talked to Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank. I know we have a lot of entrepreneurs who are listening. So, you know, Barbara Corcoran gave her best advice ever. And really, it doesn't even relate to real estate. It relates to building a business, sure, which is incredibly relevant. And by the way, I mean, that's all real estate is. It's just being an entrepreneur, building a business, but deciding to have your business around the building. You know, versus something that is online or something else, a service. It's a very quick hitting format. I'm the only crazy dude who has done a daily real estate podcast for over a year. I've done it for about a year and a half now. And, it's something that I've learned a lot from every episode. And we have guests who range from Barbara Corcoran to Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad. And you know, we talk about everything from fix and flip wholesale, starting with no money, to how to buy large apartment communities and raise millions of bucks.
Awesome. What was one thing that you learned the most during your process of making an episode every day? You know, that takes a lot of commitment and determination to, you know, you put a lot of work into these podcasts. It's a lot of effort to go out and find guests for your show too. So doing it every single day, you know, what is that taught you, essentially?
How to scale a business. When I started out, I was doing everything myself. Mm-hmm. I was finding the guests. I was doing the interview, writing the show notes, publishing it, editing it on my blog afterwards, notifying the guests that it went live through email, and then promoting it. I don't know if I mentioned, I edited the episode too, which was the largest amount of time, and I had to teach myself a program, Audacity. So that wasn't scalable, doing it on a daily basis. That right there is a full-time job. So what I learned to do is hire out. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I couldn't hire people until I had money coming into the podcast, because I couldn't, you know, it's so easy to say, well, just delegate it. It's like, well, you need money to delegate it. Mm-hmm. So what I did, I got a little creative, and this is really relevant to any entrepreneur, because it's how to be resourceful whenever you're starting out a company. What I did is I knew that the editing was the part that I absolutely hated. And I didn't want to do. Plus, it was it was taking up the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. So I found an editor. I told them I'd promote their company for free on my show in exchange for them editing my show. So I was able to do that for 2 months, and then at that point, we were going to, I was going to have to start paying them. And that's whenever I got my first sponsor, for $2,500 to sponsor my show for a month. And that was able to pay for the majority of the editing costs at the time. And since then I have brought on more sponsors on a monthly basis. And now I have someone who does the, guest outreach. I have someone who does the editing, someone who posts episodes, someone who notifies the guests, and someone who promotes it on social media. And all I do is do the interview.
Awesome. That's great. Cause that's, you know, that's exactly where I'm at. You know, I mean, I still have a fairly new podcast, and I'm doing the editing and I'm doing the show notes. You know, I'm there exactly. So that's, mm-hmm. that's a lot of insight, man. And people don't realize how much work it actually does take, to make a podcast, and let alone make it every single day. So I apologize, and I want to acknowledge you for that. So that's cool.
Yeah, thank you. And thank goodness it does take work, or else everyone would do it, yeah, right? Exactly. Then it'd be noisy and cluttered. But I've seen so many, I'd say 90% of the people who start podcasts. Well, first off, 90% say they want to start one, they don't do one. But then I'd say of the 10% that do, 90% of that 10% – fall off. Yeah. I mean, they do like 2, 3, 5, maybe 10 episodes, and they just stop. Mm-hmm. And what I realized is that it wasn't doing me much good to have a podcast that was released sporadically. I made a conscious decision in October of 2014. I'm going to do this for for the rest of the year, so October, November, December, for 3 months, and then every day. And then I'm going to make a decision on if it's a good use of my time. But I didn't feel like it was giving it a fair shake until I did it daily.
Cool.
And that's whenever things just exploded.
Awesome. And you talked about some of those free resources, like you said, reading books, listening to podcasts. I'm a huge advocate with podcasts and books as well. Can you name one resource that has been the most helpful to you? Maybe that was one book that kind of changed everything, or maybe it was one podcast that kind of changed everything.
I love the 48 Laws of Power.
Awesome.
Robert Greene.
Yeah.
That book talks all about how to attain power. And he's unapologetic with how he writes. It's very refreshing. Mm-hmm. And then one other book I'd say is Crucial Conversations. They talk about how to navigate the conversation when stakes are high and how to come up with a mutual purpose.
Awesome, that's a great. I didn't hear about Crucial Conversation before, so I'll check that out. But you also do coaching. In your eyes, what does it take to be a great mentor?
Experience and actively doing it, as well as, you know, being a good communicator.
Awesome.
And starting with the heart. Start with the heart.
Cool. Well, I want to take a moment, man. I always try to take a second to acknowledge my guest. You're doing great things in real estate. You're helping others along the way. We call it rising tide. So again, thank you. And I appreciate for you coming on my show.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been so much fun. I sincerely appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, we have two more questions. Are you ready for it?
Sweet. Yep.
All right. So if real estate was gone tomorrow, what would you be doing instead?
If real estate was gone tomorrow, then I would shift my podcast into the best advice ever, and I'd interview successful professionals across all industries and get their advice.
Sweet. Easy answer, man. Last question of the day. Gratitude is a common theme on my show. Can you tell us three things that you're grateful for?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I actually, before I have a bite to eat of whatever meal I'm eating with my girlfriend, we always mention one thing that we're grateful for.
Awesome.
And that's how I start out my day. Every day is thinking of three things I'm grateful for. So let's see. Right now, I'm grateful for Mario, who introduced us. He's one of the team members on my team. I didn't even mention that I also have someone who actively is kind of my public relations arm of the company, and he was able to connect us. So I'm grateful for Mario and connecting us. I'm grateful for the microphone that I'm speaking into, because without the microphone, we wouldn't be able to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I'm grateful for the relationship I have with my girlfriend. I love her to pieces. We're just perfect for each other. Neither one of us are perfect, but we're perfect for each other. And I'm incredibly grateful for Colleen.
Awesome. Dude, great answers, dude. And again, Joe Fairless, I appreciate you coming on again. You're amazing. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
I hope you enjoyed that show with Joe Fairless. Please do me a favor. Go rate the show on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. It helps me out more than you know. It helps the show grow and helps people find us. So yeah, do me a favor. And again, you guys are amazing. My name is Alex Hernandez, and I'm out.